Good evening, everyone. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. This station is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, July 13, 2008. It is now 8:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Or email us anytime to comments at libertytalkradio.com. If you are listening to a rebroadcast from our archives, you may also phone in your comments to 918-919-0101. Folks, before we start our broadcast, I want to still encourage everyone to listen to Andy Sutton's website, who talks about economic issues. Things are becoming more and more critical, and it is important, it is imperative that we become knowledgeable of what is going on in our economic system so we can protect ourselves. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com, and that two is a numeric two. He discusses economic issues and how they affect you. He is the absolute best in the business. His free newsletter, which comes out a couple of times a month, is phenomenal, and he also has a paid subscription. Will give you some personal advice as well. Folks, this evening, we have calling in very soon Dr. Glenn E. Page, physician, surgeon, and author of The Last Plague. Now, this is a novel, understand, right? But according to the U.S. Center of Disease Control and Prevention, most scientists believe it is only a matter of time before the next influenza pandemic strikes. People depend on government to provide information on how to protect themselves against such an outbreak, or can they? This interview is just too important to miss. He has not called in yet. But so I'd like to read a little bit about some of the promotional material he has regarding his book. He says a government study predicted that if one occurs, that's a pandemic occurs, the death toll would reach as high as 207,000 people. Now, folks, remember back in the early 1900s, there was a pandemic. Millions of people died, and our population was only a fraction of what it is today. You know? Now, people depend on government to provide information on how to protect themselves on such an outbreak, but what happens when the government doesn't want them to know they are in danger? Now, I'm going to ask him about that, what he really means by that comment, and I'm going to obviously ask him, he's going to tell us about his novel, but I believe his novel is just a way of expressing himself, so give him the freedom of expression on a subject that's of immense importance to all of us. Now, it is almost time, and hopefully he'll be calling in within the next 60 seconds. If not, we'll have a missed call, and I'd hate to see that happen. Also, folks, have you noticed that there's a second biggest bank failure in the United States occurred last Friday? I am really concerned that our financial system is starting to unravel. In fact, the Bureau of International Settlements has now tallied the amount of derivatives, the notional value of derivatives, to be $1.14 quadrillion. Folks, this is a phenomenal sum. Heretofore, quadrillion was only used as an expression in astronomical terms. Now we're using it in financial terms. It is imperative that you protect yourself and you protect your assets. Now, how to do that? That's another thing. We all need to get advice, and I do recommend that you subscribe to Andy Sutton's website, and he has a paid subscription, which is, I believe, called The Sensible Investor, and he will tell you what direction to go into. You probably won't like it, but you'll probably wind up protecting your wealth, and you don't want to lose it now, folks. because if you lose it, it's going to be for a long period of time and you'll have to start all over again. Isn't that gloomy? That is horribly gloomy. All right, now we don't have a call in yet. We still don't have a call in. I hope, here he is. Hopefully this is it.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
This is Glenn Page. I'm calling to talk to Joe.
Yes, Dr. Page, thank you very much for calling in. I just completed a preliminary introduction of you and your book and where you're going with it. Thank you so much for being part of our program this evening. Hopefully we'll have some call-ins, and let me say this in advance, folks, for those of you who are listening, please, if you have any questions or comments, our phone number is 646-652-4620. Dr. Page, thank you so much for being part of our program this evening. The subject that you touch on is a pandemic. Now, could you, for the sake of our audience, could you give us a little bit of background about yourself, if you'd like to do that first, and then walk us into how a physician and surgeon actually wound up writing a book, especially, of all things, a novel about something that I guess you feel quite passionate about.
Yes, and first off, I'd like to thank Jill for letting me be on with you today. This originated a few years ago when I had a pathologist friend who now works for intelligence for the Air Force at the Pentagon, and he made a comment to me one night when we were having dinner that statistically, the way the government explained how the AIDS virus evolved did not make sense to him. And out of that grew a story. I am the chairman of the Infectious Disease Committee at the hospitals and been that for a number of years. And one of the biggest concerns we have is a pandemic influenza that may occur at any time and how well prepared we are as a nation to handle this. I think these ideas evolve into a fictional mystery with regard to diseases, and hopefully will open people's eyes to what we may face one day, and probably will face one day, is my opinion. If you remember years ago when the Spanish influenza occurred, this is back in 1918, there were people that woke up in the morning well. By noon they were sick, and by evening they were dead. And usually these virulent strains do not occur, and have not occurred since. But we always have a concern that are we going to be ready if a pandemic flu influenza would occur in our country? And to be honest with you, at least in our area, and I live in Idaho, we are not well prepared.
Now, I understand that the pandemic back in 1918 was not concentrated in any particular area. Now, the Northeast got hit with, I believe, wasn't there millions of deaths, Doctor?
Yes, there was approximately 20 million.
20 million, okay. I thought that the number was phenomenal. And I remember seeing a documentary, and this was some time ago, so my memory is a little bit hazy, but also the Eskimos up in Alaska were also affected, and yet they were isolated, and they were trying to, at that time, determine how the infection traveled and yet skipped massive areas of geography, and I don't recall much about it. Am I mistaken by making that comment?
No, you're not, and that's been a real concern, especially with the avian flu that has been discussed in the media recent, being passed through birds. We know that sometimes they will infect pigs and other animals, but some of them are very virulent and can be passed very easily from one region to another, and sometimes we can't explain real well how that occurs. We can speculate, but we can't explain it.
Well, let me back up just a bit. Now, a colleague of yours was talking about the AIDS virus and how the AIDS virus could not have occurred or spread the way, I guess, we're led to believe it was. Can you tell us something more about that? You've piqued my curiosity.
Well, what he was telling me that, and he's a brilliant physician, and I work with a number of physicians that are far more brilliant than I am, that understood things far better than I did. He was reading some information. I think it was from a USC professor who made similar comments at that time. And it went back to the time when the Austrian people were doing the testing with vaccines down in Central Africa. And there was a concern that they may have been using primates as specimens.
Oh, I see.
And that's where this thought process occurred, was although the physicians that were there denied that took place, the workers that were with them disagreed with them and stated that it did happen. And that's where this idea kind of fostered and developed. From those comments.
Well, I have to ask you a question. Writing a book is no easy, or especially a novel, is no easy task. How, as a physician, did you ever find the time to do this?
That's a good question. People ask me that quite often, and it's interesting how, as I've become older, I have a lot harder time getting back to sleep when people wake me up at night. Like a mother will call me with a sick child. And it used to be, I used to go right back to sleep, but I learned that when that happened, I'd just pull out my computer and write for a while until I was sleepy, and then all of a sudden the book was written. So that's how it came about.
That's it. Well, you know, I need to do the same thing. I'm not writing a novel. I get up and I read something, and it could be any. It could be on economics, but it just puts me back to sleep again. So I know where you're coming from. That's wonderful. Okay, well, at least you found something productive to do. Now, although your book, The Last Plague, and we're going to plug your book, and hopefully this program will help you sell your book as well. But The Last Plague is a novel, but it's a novel tongue-in-cheek. In a way, isn't it? I mean, this is not just a whimsical idea. This is really born from your experience and what you fear might happen. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. Now we have heard for years of those people who listen to the news, I guess, that a pandemic will occur. It's just a matter of when it will occur. Am I correct in saying that also?
That would be my impression, too.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned in one of your bios that there was an expected death rate of 207,000 people. Since the death rate on the pandemic of 100 years ago or so, in 1918, was 20 million, what brings this number all the way down to 200,000?
We do have ways to combat the influenza virus. Usually when it mutates, it's the type A that mutates. And we do have medications. If the mutation is included in the flu vaccine for that particular year, they should be protected too. We're hoping that the containment process is much better than it was previously. We're hoping that the ability to mobilize the healthcare to cover this will be better. So we do have ways and means to combat this. The biggest worry I always have is how rapid and quickly it can be passed, especially with aviation like it is today and people traveling throughout the world. And maybe there's a little paranoia here on my part, but I still a little nervous about that.
Well, it, you know, we have a tendency in the United States to think of us as the world, and we're just not. If a pandemic breaks out, it may break out from in another country first. It doesn't necessarily have to be just transported here, and it, that to be our problem. It's a worldwide problem, is it not?
It is. It is a worldwide problem. The world has become smaller with our communication and ability to travel from one place to another in a matter of a day. And for that reason, it's much different than it was back in even the 1950s when we had the Asian flu that,
right.
that occurred. So it is a worldwide problem.
Okay, now, from your perspective, if a pandemic would break out, where would it start, emanate from, which countries would be most affected by it, and how would you see it progressing?
That's a good question, because in all reality, the mutation of the virus could take place in any country. It's not necessarily limited to one specific location. You look at the ones that we've had in the past, actually have been named after the areas where they felt they may have come from, like the Spanish flu, the Asian flu, the Hong Kong flu,
right.
the Russian flu. So it dictates to us all that we need to be vigilant throughout the whole world as far as if something should occur, just like it did in the Far East this year, to limit its potential spread. And I think CDC and other organizations are attempting to try to do that and trying to help us all to be more aware of a potential pandemic that could occur and ways and means to prepare for it.
Right.
Other countries are really going to struggle. I feel sorry for them.
Well, it would seem that if we are at least cognizant of this, and we have at least the embryonic stage of a governmental agency working on it, thinking about it, having partial solutions, we at least have a jump start on the problem. What about a country like China, which is about the same square mile? Well, I guess with Alaska, we're bigger than China. But, you know, as far as mainland China and just mainland United States, about the same size. But they have 1.3 billion people. Over 1 billion of them are peasants. If a pandemic would break out there, how would their government, you know, initiate a program? Is it at all possible to inoculate 1 billion people in the period of time that is required to arrest the flu?
I would think they would really struggle, and the reason being is the length of time it takes for us to create the vaccine. I think one or two companies make the vaccine, and that was one of the things that is disturbing in our committee, is how quickly could the vaccine be prepared, how quickly could it be distributed, just in our country alone, let alone other countries in the world. If it is anywhere close to being as virulent as the Spanish flu, I think we would see millions of people die.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Well, knowing how long it takes to get any form of medication or you know, passed through our system, it has to be checked and rechecked. In the event of a pandemic, will all these controls be dropped, and then at that point, whatever we have and we think will work, we'll send out and then take potluck from there? Or will it go through the same bureaucratic process that our pharmaceuticals go through now?
There is, with regard to influenza A, there's a couple of medications, pill form, that can be used. I would have to assume that if it was as virulent as the Spanish flu virus was, that there would have to be a stockpile to be able to do much good to prevent its spread. But we could, if it was stockpiled, I think we could avert and save the lives of many.
Yeah. Well,
as far as the vaccine, I just don't see how they could create that quick enough.
All right, so we would have to do this. How do we do this in advance when we don't know what it is?
Well, that's the key is that, as I understand, the vaccines are created each year from the previous types of flu that were in a given area. And if we have a new type of flu that has mutated and is quite virulent, it will not be in that vaccine to protect us.
Right. Well, if it's something new, then all bets are off. I mean, people are going to die. I mean, there's no way to develop a vaccine, distribute it, have it people inoculated, and, you know, there's no way that's going to happen, is it?
No. And the other thing you have to look at is what groups of people could be involved. Suppose the physicians and nurses are infected by this. Are they going to be able to give the care that may be needed?
Yeah.
You know, you can look at the truck drivers to take food to the various cities throughout our nation. You can look at an overall picture of this and see that there could be some devastating effects depending on what cities are involved or what occupations are involved because of this virulent strain.
Well, I guess you can conclude then the ultimate terrorist then is the influenza, is some sort of strain, influenza, that can attack us. I mean, that could be more devastating than any outbreak of war.
I really believe that. The public health people, at least here in Idaho, every time we meet with them, talk about this almost every meeting. What are we doing? What are we trying to do to try to prepare? And I know it's probably happening in other states with the public health services,
right,
and trying to prepare the best we can, because we feel that, we don't know when, but we feel that it'll probably be inevitable.
How would our listeners protect themselves in advance? What type of steps, not knowing what type of strain it will be or whether or not there's an antidote for it, what would people do just generically to lessen the probability of becoming infected?
Every physician can prescribe medication. The clinicians know what they are. There's two out there. They're in the pharmacies right now. And so I guess you could potentially stockpile that in your home and have it available as a precaution.
Okay.
That's one thing that you potentially can do. I really have faith in our public health system in that they're trying to establish protocols for isolation and protocols to try to limit its progression. But if a single person out there wanted to protect themselves or protect their family, the medicine is readily available. It's just that we worry that we'll run out, that it'll be a run on the pharmacies. They won't be able to get it. They won't have it available. But at the same time, if it's like one of the later ones that we've had, which are not quite as virulent, then we shouldn't see the problem that we would expect like we did with the Spanish one.
Well, last winter, I think I had the flu three times, but very weak. I mean, I just felt lousy for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then it eventually faded away. I did have my flu shot and the whole bit. Never got very sick, but didn't feel well at all. And the whole winter went the whole way that way until eventually it just worked its way through. And I guess I was infected, but it was not dangerous at that point, you know. Let me take a second for station identification, please, doctor. Just 1 second. Folks, you're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. Our guest this evening is Dr. Glenn E. Page. He's a physician, surgeon, and author of The Last Plague. We're talking about pandemic, America's impending threat. Please call in with your questions and comments, 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. All right. Now, doctor, would you tell us a little bit about your book? Give us a little bit of an appetite for what we would be reading in your book, please.
You remember watching the Ten Commandments when Charlton Heston called the plagues down on the Egyptians so that they would release the Israelites from bondage. There was 10 plagues, and to bring about that plague, he released a vial. Well, he didn't use the 11th vial because it wasn't needed, and he hid it in the Ark of the Covenant to stay for centuries.
Okay.
And that's now evil forces want that vial released to bring about what we call the last plague.
Okay. And I guess the world nearly comes to an end in this book. Or maybe I shouldn't ask that question.
Well, it does. It leads us into some. There's actually it's a series. There's 5 books, and this is the first of 5. And so it leads us into apocalyptic times, and yes, it a finish where it's pretty dramatic as far as but not the end of times. It has a happy ending.
Okay, very good. I'm glad to hear that. Now, in the write-ups that I received from your agent, you indicate in there a question, whether or not the government really wants us to know. And I didn't understand really what you meant by that. Are you suggesting that the government may know that there's a pandemic coming and may not want to do anything about it? Or what was the motivation behind that particular comment?
I think the government knows, but I also feel like the government is at least the state governments, and I think the federal government are realizing that this could be a potential threat, and people have been asked to find ways to help us avoid a serious tragedy. I don't think that there's any kind of potential conspiracy going on with regard to pandemic flu. I think it's something that's real that we need to face, and the people that I've talked to with regard to the state people agree completely that it is real and it's something we need to address and be prepared for.
Well, I'm sorry, you mentioned Israel. Now, I lost the connection between Israel and the comment that you were making before that. Could you explain that to me?
The conspiracy and plot also involves the Jewish people, especially their intelligence agency, the Mossad. The Jewish people are actually the ones that are the protector of the Ark, and they're the ones that are the protector of the vial. The Jewish people are deeply involved with the plot.
Oh, you mean in your book?
Yeah,
in the book. Oh, okay. All right. That's okay. Now, the Ark of the Covenant has never really been found, has it?
No, it hasn't.
It's not been found. Okay. And I guess there's been many Raiders of the Lost Ark. I guess that's part of that series as well. Now, would the pandemic most likely be an avian-born type influenza, or could it emanate from most likely from another source?
My understanding is that quite often is avian involved. It can involve other animals. I think the reservoir for Taipei is wild birds, but it can infest pigs and horses and people also. But I think the reservoir is usually the wild birds.
Right. Is there any concern that a terrorist organization, whether it be Al-Qaeda, whatever they want to call it these days, but a terrorist organization can, in fact, initiate some sort of pandemic?
That's a good question. I think that that is probably, I would think it would be hard to do, and probably others that are far wiser than I could answer that question better than I could. I think that there is, with regard to creating various types of infections that could involve our country, that's very, very possible, whether it be the one of the influenza viruses. I think there's others that would be far easier to create and infect our country with.
Yeah, I guess such as an influenza virus, that can go everywhere, anywhere. They can't contain that. I mean, it just get out of hand. They may get it themselves, and that'd be the end of that.
That's correct.
Is there in the event of an outbreak, do you see any changes in government? And in your book, do you make mention of this or suggest this, that there'd be a curtailment of civil liberties or anything like that, where the government takes control over everything until supposedly, you know, the pandemic is been arrested or anything like that? Do you take that approach?
Yes, I do.
Okay, and tell us about it. What approach do you take in your book on that?
I see that the situation will become so severe in the book that the choices of people will be taken away.
Okay, and how do you suggest that the government's going to initiate action? What kind of action does the government take to take control?
Basically, using fear is their motive to dictate to people that this is the only alternative to keep them safe and from harm.
And that's really no different than what we have now, is it? I mean, when we went to war in Iraq, it was the fear factor. You know, if we don't go to Iraq, they're going to, you know, if we don't go there, they'll come here. You know, of course, we learn differently. But do you think the government would be trusted in you know, we have a lack of trust in the government now. You think that this lack of trust will carry over at all?
I think the lack of trust is still there. The difference is people look for a leader. They look for hope. They look for some stabilizing factor. And when they're faced with that, they will compromise and hope that their fears of what the government might do will not be realized.
Yeah. And then the question is that when the pandemic is over, do we return back to return the civil liberties, or do they remain the way they are? I mean, is this perpetuated because we have to perpetuate the fear factor and keep everyone in line, I guess. I know there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there, of which you know, some may or may not be true, but you really get concerned about that, especially when you see the actions or you experience the actions of government and the way government has used fear in order to attain more control and basically decimate the Constitution for our own good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I agree with you completely.
Yeah. And okay, now why is it that we have the war on poverty, we have the war on drugs, we have the war on terror, we have the war on, you name it, we have a war going on. Why don't we have a war on pandemics? Or, you know, that's a silly term, obviously. But why don't we have something as urgent, you know, as visible to the public, something that we can... You know, I'm so sick about hearing about the war on terror. I'm now convinced there is no such thing as terror. This is all, you know, made up. But, I mean, there are terrorists out there and all that. But, I mean, everything else is window dressing by the government. I'm convinced of that at this point because I'm so sick of hearing it. But I don't hear anything about a possible pandemic and what we should be doing about it. When I'm not being educated, the public's not being educated about it. We don't hear about it in the news. I mean, I surely can tell you everything about Britney Spears that you want to know, but I can't tell you a thing about a pandemic. And we all know that eventually, someday, will occur. Why do you think that's the case?
Isn't that interesting that is so true, that here we have this potential harm to our country and the world, and yet we're so focused on the careers or financial gain or the lives of other people that really are insignificant with regard to what we're faced with and potentially will struggle with. I think that when you look at the media, a lot of the media, Joe, will not concentrate on what you're concentrating on. They focus on things that, in all reality, sell and create ratings. And I don't think to them this is something that they have realized that there is a potential for this occurring. And will not focus on it probably until it has occurred.
So what we need to do, Doc, is we need to make pandemics a money-making proposition. We have to make this commercially viable, then we'd be okay.
And unfortunately, that's
probably... Isn't that sick? What I just said sounded so sick, but probably true. My goodness gracious me, I can't believe I said that. You should be kicking me right now for that. But we're agreeing with one another. This is terrible. Now, if in fact, so you're saying that we have vaccines now or stuff that may somewhat arrest a pandemic, that at least a strain that we suspect will arrive here, so that would help us somewhat and buy us some time until we can perfect it and understand what kind of pandemic we're dealing with. Is that true?
Yes, that's what we're hoping for, yeah. Is that, and if we're fortunate, there would be something that is not quite so virulent, but would still wake people up.
All right.
That may be the key that is needed for us to be more prepared in the future for something that may be more virulent and more deadly.
All right, here's my scenario, and then I want you to take off on it, all right? And tell me whether you agree or disagree. A pandemic breaks out here. What do you think the outrage will be by the general public regarding airlines coming in from overseas? You see where I'm coming from. Both immigration, legal, illegal immigration, just regular commercial and private transport, ships coming into harbor, you know, airplanes, boats, you name it. All this international travel, where do you see this? How do you see this thing unraveling, if at all?
Oh, it will. If it's a virulent germ, the travel will unravel. All steps possible to try to prevent its spread will be attempted. I I see a lot of chaos. I worry about people remaining under control and not becoming paranoid to the point that they hurt other people.
Right.
That's a concern. I worry about the interruption of multiple number of things. The ability to, what if we can't feed a city and all chaos breaks out because people are hungry? What's going to happen if the doctors can't take care of people in New York or Philadelphia or Chicago? What will that dictate to people in those cities? How safe will they be? There's a lot of rippling effect that will take place if something occurs, and especially if it's virulent, where it affects people quickly. I see a complete interruption of trucks bringing food into cities, travel, extensive travel. It can go, a myriad of things could occur. Just depends on how the situation plays out.
Well, in your book, how do you play it out?
In the book, the plague is a little different than the plague like you see with a bubonic plague or an influenza. It actually affects the bodies of females, and so it's specific for a certain a region of the body, and doesn't actually cause death, but causes other problems.
I see.
So it's a little bit different than what you see in with the pandemic influenza.
Okay, now let's go back to the pandemic. The way I see it is that if in fact it affects enough people, and people become frightened, we have a total breakdown of society.
I agree.
Okay.
I think we would have a complete breakdown of society. I think that's my greatest fear, is that not maybe so much from the pandemic influenza, how are people going to react?
Right. I mean, people will not go to work and fear that the guy next to them may sneeze and he has, you know, all this goes through
exactly.
Our minds. And obviously the first thing we do is we bunker down, don't we? We go to the store,
that's
grab
exactly
as much
right.
food as we can, bring it home, shut all the doors, and God forbid our neighbor comes by for a cup of sugar, you know?
Right.
That just ain't going to happen. I'll be honest with you. I can't even imagine what would happen. I mean, I would see just a breakdown of society to a point where absolutely everything stops. And I can see where people say, well, they would stop planes. I don't think we would stop planes from coming into the United States. I don't think there would be anybody in the control towers at the airport. No one would go to work in the first place. Thus, planes wouldn't be able to land. I mean, is my mind getting a little bit too wild and furious at this point, or is this what we probably could expect in the event of a full-blown pandemic?
It's interesting, that Joe, that you mentioned that, because I was reading an article on that. It specifically said, what if the air traffic controllers were to become infected themselves as a specific occupation? What would that do to our country, and what would that do to the world? And it just gave that example as just one specific example, not including the countless other occupations that
right.
that are integrated together in our society to help us to function. I agree with you. I think the potential of a complete breakdown is there.
Yeah. Well, see, I think we're looking at from our point of view. Say, we will not allow people to enter the United States in fear that they have they're carrying the disease. However, most people would not want to even travel here in fear that they may be infected by landing here. So there's really a two-way street, and we have to think two ways. And this breaks down all of international trade. Everything stops.
Right.
My goodness gracious. I you know, I don't even know how to put my hands around that. I don't even know what question to ask, Doctor, at this point. I mean, this is a truly Armageddon, right? First degree.
It would be. We are so integrated, relying and depending on each other to help society function, that just a few breakdowns in certain areas would be devastating to our society. Absolutely devastating.
Yeah, we wouldn't have to worry about Wall Street and the Dow Jones Industrial Average at this point, would we?
No, we wouldn't at all.
No, that would be the last thing on our list. All right. Now, by the way, let me just give a station identification, which I forgot to do 5 minutes ago, and I always forget. This is Joe Cristiano. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. We have as our guest this evening Dr. Glenn E. Page. Is a physician and surgeon and author of The Last Plague. We're talking about a pandemic and how it can be America's impending threat. Please, folks, I know you're out there. I guess you're shy this evening. 646-652-4620. 646-652-4620. Now, if you want me to plead with you, I will plead with you. Please call in, okay? Thank you very much. We know there are tons of people listening because we keep track of that stuff, and yet people are very reluctant to call in. I know I am when I'm listening to a radio program. Although I have a question, I sit there and say, well, maybe, and I hesitate, and I never wind up calling in. So I can guarantee you we have listeners out there, Doctor, so we're not just talking to the wind. And this, by the way, this program will be rebroadcasted for the next 3.5 days. And people will download it, and they download it all over the world. I get emails from Lisbon, Spain, Malaysia, Brazil. Last week we got a call 6:30 in my 6:30 broadcast. I got one from Brazil, so we get it from all over the world, and hopefully this will help you out, and also help people to start thinking about maybe this is something that we should be concerned about, and prompt our legislatures to move forward on it. What would you recommend the average Joe Blow like me, what should we do to protect ourselves if there's the thing that we could do to protect ourselves and maybe even to prevent something like this from happening from our end?
The difficulty with protecting the pandemic flus is that there can be an emergent shift to acquire new characteristics in the virus and which actually creates a new or a novel virus which the people would not have immunity to, and so to try to prevent that, I'm not aware of how we can prevent that, but if something should happen, believe me, it'll mobilize the public health service in each of the states. They will also mobilize CDC with recommendations for people. I know that the people in each state will be given certain instructions and directions to follow, and it may very well be that they'll be asked to isolate themselves, to avoid certain things such as going to work or being mobile in some way. But I really believe that we are working on this, and I think the health service and others are working to try to get to a point where we can reassure people that even in the worst scenario, we have options for them to protect them. But I honestly believe that we're not there yet.
Okay.
So, go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry I interrupted you. I apologize.
I was just gonna add to that it's true that each person can talk to their physician, and the majority of physicians know just exactly what I'm speaking about. They know of its potential a threat, they're aware of how these can be treated. We're aware of isolation techniques. We have done this for years and years. So it's not that we're entering this area blind.
Okay.
It's that we just may not be as prepared as we should be.
Right. Is our medical community involved? Is this a subject that is discussed within the medical community, or is this thing just an adjunct that sits out there dormant and only comes to the fore once we perceive there's going to be a problem on the horizon?
Public health services and others that are specifically involved with the potential of an influenza pandemic are attempting to educate the physicians and other healthcare personnel to be more aware and to attempt ways to educate them to the possibility that this may occur. I think it's not. It's spoken fairly frequently. I hear it more frequently because I'm on this committee. But we take it to staff meetings quite frequently.
Okay.
To discuss this and get their feedback with regard to things that we might be able to do.
In all of the science fiction movies that I've watched, and I don't watch many of them because I'm not a science fiction aficionado by any stretch of the imagination, but when it's on TV and it looks interesting, I always notice that whenever there's some sort of disease spreading, you know, in this scenario, people are walking around with those white masks on, those little respirators that are just paper respirators. Would it be prudent for every household to have a box of those, especially the high-efficiency ones that would block, you know, germs or whatever they do, would that be something that everyone should have as a anti-pandemic item in their arsenal?
To me, that would be an overkill. I think some people would potentially do it. What we don't know is that how a virulent a germ may be with the change. Indeed, if the outbreak was in your community, we do those things in the hospital if certain particular diseases were to occur. We've been hit with the West Nile virus in our state the last few years, and so isolation of certain germs is appropriate. I think what's going to happen if something does occur that the public health people and CDC will give us recommendations if that's necessary. But if somebody desired to do that as a precaution, that's their option to do that.
All right. Now, if does not the would not the pandemic that we anticipate may hit us someday actually spread aerially, you know, through the air? So would it be, would it not, or would it spread some other way?
Well, typically it's spread through the air.
Yeah, it's an airborne thing. So, I mean, if you did have that the paper respirator, you could be doing yourself some good. It's a measure of protection.
That's correct.
Oh, okay. All right.
There is a measure of protection. Yeah,
oh, okay. Very good. All right. Well, I have an industrial health testing company. We do respirators. We don't sell respirators, but we fit test people in an industry for respirators. So I know a little bit about respirators. I'm not, by far not an expert, but I've seen people wear those in the movies, so I just thought that I would bring that up. Doctor, we have about 3 minutes remaining. I want to leave those 3 minutes for you to tell our listening audience anything that you would like to say to promote your book, you know, where they can buy your book, you know, and anything else that you'd like to close the program with.
Okay, appreciate that. It's the book is called The Last Plague. It's the first book of a series of five that discusses a pandemic of plague that actually involves females. It discusses a group of people that who really have their own struggles. It follows their journey through apocalyptic times to the final battle of Armageddon. But really, the whole purpose of writing the story was to help each character with the facing of their own personal battles and demons during this journey, with the hope that the people might identify with these characters and be able to fight their own battles and their own personal demons themselves.
I see.
And so it can be attained at on Amazon.com. It can be obtained through Barnes & Noble. If they want a signed copy and read the first two chapters, they can do that at our website called lastplague.com.
Okay. All right. Very good, Doctor. Well, I would like to thank you so much for being our guest this evening. It was a fascinating discussion. I hope we are both wrong in that we never have to face this pandemic, not only for ourselves, but our children and our children's children, and somehow we can avoid this. But, you know, the reality is that there's a probability, and I think maybe your book will open the eyes of many, many people. And hopefully, as a result of being this program, you'll go straight to the top of the New York Times bestseller list. You know that. Okay, we hope so.
I sure appreciate you allowing me to be on the program, too.
Our pleasure, Doctor. Thank you very much. And if you will send me your mailing address or a mailing address, I'd like to send you an official Liberty Talk Radio coffee mug, if you'd like one. And and I'll just mail to you. If you can just send it to comments@libertytalkradio.com or have your publicist send me a note and just tell me where to mail it, okay?
That sounds great, Joe. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much and good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, that was absolutely fascinating. Here's a gentleman who writes a book, a novel, that discusses an issue that we may face someday, and has a twofold purpose. It wakes us up to the fact that there may be a pandemic coming, and that's probably the most likely terrorist attack that we'll have here, but also how to face our own demons within ourselves during times of adversity. So please, folks, do go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble Bookstore and buy the book, The Last Plague. The author is Dr. Glenn E. Page. Should be fascinating, and we certainly appreciate him being part of our show. Now, right now, we'd like to close the program. This is the end of tonight's program. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends, and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away, or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. And remember, as Ron Paul has on his desk, don't steal. The government hates competition. Until next time, and that'll be Thursday, July 17th at 6:30 a.m., we'll have our next live broadcast. We're going to be talking about choice equals liberty and what that really means. And we hope you do call in during our live broadcast, 646-652-4620. Remember, our email address, comments@libertytalkradio.com. And until next time, stay well. Stay tuned.